Hello, everybody.
Hello.
It's the D-Day Darlings here for episode one of Behind the Uniform.
Well, we promised we've not got a uniform and we have other clothes.
But
yes. But we'll leave that to your imagination.
Straight in there, Katie.
Oh, well, no, we've got to set the bar.
Oh, I see. There. Yeah. So we're very excited. It's this first episode in the series.
We feel really professional. We're sitting here in the studio. Honestly, we've even got a plant on the table. We really
we've
feel...
We've really dressed the set, haven't
we've
we?
We've got notes. We've mugs. Got mugs. I mean, there's nothing more. We've left nothing out, have we?
No. We've been nesting.
But we're really excited to bring you this podcast. It's been a long time in the planning. Or we've been wanting to do it for quite a while. And, you know, it's something that means a lot to us. For you to get to really know the D-Day Darlings and us as people rather than... the marching and the flag waving. You know, we love that part of it, but we want you to see a little bit more of us, I think. That's a...
Well,
you see, now who's been saucy?
So, you know. Definitely. I mean, we talk a lot after gigs.
We talk a lot.
Yeah. Generally, we talk a lot.
We talk a lot. Goodbye, thank you.
We just needed a channel, you know, somewhere to actually let loose because we do talk a lot. We like to talk. And as probably some of you know, we often hang around after gigs and we'll talk to people and it's always so lovely. And, you know, I think it's a nice thing to be able to reach people in this podcast and just give you a bit of an insight, really, about... what our life is like on the road, behind the scenes, what we get up to, our camaraderie that we share.
Yeah. But also, you know, as we said in our initial sort of video, there's some of the more touching times that we've shared and we've all experienced some sad times and how we've helped each other through. And I think that really represents, I think, women and friendship, you know, and I think a lot of people can relate to that and how you support each other. And we can tell you a lot of, you know, a little bit about our stories and stuff and our own personal lives as well. And, you know,
that's it, because we do spend so much time together. So we've sort of been with each other through big life events. Mm-hmm. And we'll get into this in the podcast. But we spend hours and hours in the car together, don't we? Mm-hmm. Traveling, you know, the length and breadth of the country. So
we know every service station going.
And we know if there's a Costa or a Starbucks.
Yeah, let's not talk on that. It's a touchy subject. You know, I'm a Starbucks girl, but these two are...
Costa all the way.
Yeah, I'm not convinced.
We actually are sitting here with three Costa cups in front of us.
Sorry, Starbucks.
We did a recent poll on Instagram, and I have to say, Costa...
won.
Pipped Starbucks to the post. It won.
Yeah. Not sure. I
think it was close.
We need to redo the poll.
Okay.
Shall we just introduce ourselves, just in case, I think, but then people know who we are, but just so people know exactly who it is that's talking. We've got our lovely darling Alana.
Hello.
Our lovely darling Alana. Hinckley, Nuneaton? I get a bit confused.
From Nuneaton originally, but now I live in Hinckley with my husband and my little boy, Arthur.
Yay. So lovely. Gorgeous husband, lovely child, absolutely gorgeous Arthur.
Very lucky.
We've got the lovely darling Emily, as you know.
Yes, hello.
Cov bird.
Yes, born and raised in Coventry. Bird. Yes, and now live in Rugby. So I haven't really moved very far from home. Still popping around to my mum and dad all the time in Coventry. Mm-hmm. And I live in Rugby with my husband Chris and our two children.
Yay! Lovely Chris, gorgeous children, so amazing. And you know me, come on. Darling Katie, here we go.
Where else?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm still going. And I am from Yorkshire, as you well know, E by gum. And now I live in the Midlands, proud honorary Brummie. I love it here. I mean, I love Yorkshire. Don't get me wrong. Never forget my roots. But I really do love being a Midlands girl as well. I love it. I love how central it is. I just love being a Midlands girl. So I live here with my gorgeous fiancé, Stuart, and my new little boy who's celebrating his first birthday this week.
Yay!
And we're going to get into
It's
party time. And my beautiful stepdaughter, Caitlin. So I am proud as punch of them. I'm proud to be an honorary Brummie.
Yes.
And yeah, that's who's here. Now, we are going to be having some of the other darlings involved in this series. So don't worry for those Nicola fans and those Louise fans.
All the
Kylie,
Jessica fans.
Yes, all the Jessica fans. Have I missed anybody? Quick before I get
Lindsay.
In trouble. And
Louise.
Lindsay and Louise. They will be featuring as well in this glorious podcast and you'll get to know a little bit about them as well. So hurrah. How exciting.
Very exciting.
Yay. I think we should... get to know us a little bit more with a very exciting quick fire round. What do you think? Quick fire round?
Quick fire.
I love a quick fire round.
Yeah, you can't beat
this
it, really.
Or that.
Yeah. Although I think I could probably predict most of the answers from you two by now.
Well, we do know each other very well.
We do, but our lovely listeners don't. So let's have a go. I'm going to start, I think, with Alana.
Yeah. Go.
Don't look so scared. I'm going to give you a couple of options. You just got to, don't even think about it.
Okay,
you know,
go on.
The first thing that comes into your head.
Okay.
So let's, I know what you're going to say for this one straight away. Exotic vacation or British staycation.
Oh, exotic vacation. 100%.
Every week.
Get me in the sun.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Our jet setter, Alana.
100%.
Sweet or savoury?
Oh, savoury.
Mmm,
yeah.
Interesting.
Mm. I like a bit of salty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Katie, stop. I could see. No comment.
Bleep.
Heels or flats?
Hello, I turn up to every single gig in heels.
That's true.
She sleeps in heels.
So heels every single day of the week.
Oh, dear. Okay, Katie, let's try you.
Oh, gosh.
I'm going to give you a really difficult one because I know that you love both of these things. Exotic vacation or ski trip?
Oh, I can't answer.
You have to.
It's both. What I love the most is sunbathing on top of a very snowy mountain.
Oh,
when it's red hot.
Ideal.
When it's red hot, whip your top off. Well, not everything, you know. But, you know, get your top off. Get in a sun lounger at the top of a mountain with a hot chocolate and it's blowing hot sun.
Are you kidding?
No, yeah. Oh, gosh, it gets really hot right at the top. I love it. That is my favourite thing to do. Just sit there sunbathing and then getting your ski jacket on and skiing down. And it's very cold at the bottom. But yeah, I love both.
You see,
so
I'm just
if I
not...
can combine the two, even better.
Ah. I'm going to tell you quickly now my one and only skiing experience.
Oh, yeah.
I had a... I've told you already, have I?
No.
She's glazing over.
No, you haven't.
Have I not?
No.
Was that just a good guess?
Are you Eddie the Eagle's love child?
No, I'm not. No. I'm not Eddie the Eagle's love child, but I had... This is my one experience of skiing in my life, so you can probably see why it put me off. I had one skiing lesson at the Tamworth Snow Dome with Eddie the Eagle.
Tropical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I broke my arm.
Oh, darling. Oh, gosh.
I think I was in year 7. So I was, you know.
Was it like a school trip?
It was a birthday party.
Oh.
I know.
Emily, tarnished for life.
I know.
Well, you just say you should get straight back on those skis when you fall down, and you didn't do that, so clearly you're...
But we all know where my preferred holiday destination is.
Cornwall.
Yeah, Cornwall.
Cornwall. She loves the British Isles.
Hey, look, sometimes we go to Devon.
Yeah, sometimes we go to Devon.
But yeah, basically it's Cornwall or Cornwall.
Somewhere
or Cornwall
down
or Devon or Cornwall.
Somewhere down there. She does love it. I mean, but they go several times a year as well and
yeah,
always have a lovely time. Oh, and the sun always seems to be shining anyway, so it's, you know.
There you go. You can't beat it. You can't beat a holiday. Cornish coast.
Yeah. I do love the Cornish coast for 4 days.
I
like to trip off to Dubai.
I've only been to Cornwall
or to a mountain.
On a cruise. Well, now it's testing my geography because I think it's Cornwall.
Yes, there we go. Yes.
Yeah, on a cruise.
It's beautiful. Though,
and it was absolutely stunning.
It is stunning.
But I've actually never holidayed in Cornwall.
You've got to get down
it's
there,
gorgeous.
Girl.
Am I missing
do
out?
Do you know what? Arthur would absolutely love it down there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's beautiful. Yeah. It's so lovely for kids. And it's so accessible for us, you know what I mean? It's absolutely perfect.
So I'm all about Cornwall, as everyone will know.
Right, I've got to add to the quick fire round. Like, I'm going to ask Emily now.
Okay.
Thongs or granny pants?
That is so cruel. She's only asking me that question because she knows. She knows now that I am partial to a big pair of pants.
They're more like a parachute.
Nah, this is really unfair. I have to say, in my younger years, so when I first started working for the D-Day Darlings, I would never go anywhere without my lacy thong on.
Chicken wire.
It was. No, it was a very tasteful lacy thong.
There was nothing to it. It was a piece of cotton.
I can't believe that we're talking about this already.
Well,
we've been into this podcast for about
5 minutes in.
I've never seen anything so disgusting. It was so thin. There's nothing there. There's no support. How do you keep it all in? The wobbles.
So basically, I've gone from one extreme to the other because I was a huge fan of the lacy thong. And that was basically my undergarment of choice. But since having two children, I just can't seem to get myself out of the big white Marks and Spencer's knickers that I now love.
Other brands are available.
Yes, yeah, sorry.
Tesco's. she's literally resurrected her grandmother's bloomers. They're out now, and I don't think you'll ever go back to the chicken wire.
I basically discovered a whole new world of comfort, and now I'm not willing to go back to where I was before.
What about you, Alana? What's your pant of choice?
Well, it actually just makes me think about how many gigs we've done and how many times we've seen our whole Spanx setups.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're talking behind the uniform, you really want to see what's behind the uniform. It's all sorts of scaffolding. And
I just need to clarify for anybody, when Alana uses the word Spanx, she's talking about hold all in underwear.
I'm like...
She's not talking about spanking.
She's not talking about some activity.
No. So we're talking about... And actually, all three of us
We are partial to Spanx.
A spank.
A spanking.
Just to reiterate, hold all in underwear.
Yeah.
But yes, it can be tricky sometimes, especially with, you know, the wiggle dresses and everything. You know, obviously we've all been through having children and everything. So sometimes those, you know,
those shows in the first few weeks after having a baby, it's like everything. Mm. It's like we hold everything in. Like you can barely breathe when we're on stage. It's like we're that sucked in with all of our undergarments. It's like, what's the latest holder in a row? What's the latest holder in a row that we can get? And it's just, yes. But anyway, do we have any more?
Let me quick fire. Emily,
or should we just stay on the pants?
Fellow coffee lover,
yes.
Hot coffee or iced coffee?
Hot coffee.
Yeah. Now, I had my first iced coffee on Saturday of the year, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. The sun was shining. It made me feel like spring
had arrived. Brain freeze.
So I'm a little bit of both.
Now we're onto this subject. I think we need to tell everybody about our mugs.
Yay! Our mugs.
We've bought some special mugs into the studio with us today.
You can't see them, but we are filming a little bit today. So for the purpose of the filming, we're going to just hold our mugs up and we are going to talk about our lovely mugs.
Yes.
Because we know that you are so interested and riveted by this topic. But actually, if you think about it...
Stay with us. It does get better.
We really know how to live.
A cup holds... This is with me several times a day. It is my cup of choice. I think I pick my mug depending on how I feel. Like if I'm feeling really empowered and really like focused and ready to go, I've got a mug in there that's queen of everything. I didn't buy myself that, by the way. That was a gift. And if I'm feeling really empowered, I'll grab that out of the cupboard and I'll be like, yes, I'm feeling empowered today. I'm feeling the queen of everything. I've got this. I can do this. And then sometimes when I'm feeling really humbled and happy and cozy and having my lovely moments with Grayson, I will take out this mug, which is my Yorkshire Mum mug. Now, this was brought to me as a gift after I had my beautiful son, Grayson, by one of my D-Day juniors, Zach. And I'm so proud of it because it says Yorkshire Mum on it. Born and brewed in Yorkshire. And I am so proud of my roots, so proud and ecstatic to finally be a mum. And we will talk to you about that in the next episode. We're going to be talking to you about my journey. A lot of you know about it. But I'm just proud as punch and I love this mug and it has to have Yorkshire tea in it.
Yes. Mm. Yeah.
It has to have Yorkshire tea.
It's got the graphics of the Yorkshire tea on the front.
Yeah.
But instead of saying Yorkshire tea, it says Yorkshire Mum.
Yorkshire Mum.
It's just the perfect mug for Katie Ashby.
Yeah.
He did very well there.
He did.
Finding that. That is the perfect gift for you.
But like I said, it's got to be Yorkshire tea. Sometimes Stuart comes home after we run out of tea bags and he's got PG tips and I'm like, what are you doing? It's alien. It doesn't make sense for me to put a PG tip in my... Because I'm so Yorkshire. That's like walking into a male toilet, thinking it's a female toilet, and you're like, this feels weird. Why am I in here? It's alien.
How often do you walk into the male
toilet? Quite often, I've been known. Depends what mood I'm in. No, but anyway, that's me and my mug. Me and my mug.
Meant for each other.
We will do that throughout the podcast. Just break into
there's a song. Song for every occasion.
But so me and my mug. Emily.
My mug. Okay. Well.
Oh, it's massive. This one.
Yeah,
it's massive.
It is a huge mug.
It is a huge mug. And
She's always been a big mug, that one.
So this is a beautiful mug. It's, to describe it, it's sort of clay-like. It looks very handmade and hand-painted. It's a sort of one-off, so you wouldn't get another mug that's exactly the same as this because you can see that it's been obviously made by hand.
Beautiful.
And it's got some sort of stormy-looking trees on it and a beautiful sort of dusky sky with blues and purples and yellows. We'll pop a little picture out on Instagram for all of our followers there so you can actually see this mug. But this is a special mug to me because it comes from Boscastle Pottery. I'm back in Cornwall, folks.
Back in Cornwall.
So there's this wonderful place in Boscastle, which is North Cornwall. I'm sure many people will know it. It's a really lovely place. And we holiday there quite a lot. And Boscastle Pottery is the shop in Boscastle where they sell all of this very unique pottery. And it's just so wonderfully traditional. So you can see the guy who makes everything there, the potter.
Does it look like Patrick Swayze at the wheel in Ghost?
Exactly.
I don't want to know any more than if he doesn't.
So yeah, he's got the actual potter's wheel in the corner. There's like a studio in the corner, and then all of the lovely pottery out front. So you can see him actually making all of the products. And there's a lovely sort of rich smell of sort of dust and almost a bit like old caravan, but in a lovely, cozy way. It's so lovely, and you can really smell that it's a workspace. Katie's not sure about this. Anyway,
sounds lovely.
They have
get me to that.
I love the fact that they're so successful, so they can barely keep up with demand. He's in the studio every day, creating more mugs, vases, you know, cups. They do a whole range of products, and they've got absolutely no online footprint. So they don't go online at all. There's no website. There's no social media. You have to go to that one shop in Boscastle to buy anything from Boscastle Pottery.
Wow.
And they've been going since the 60s, and they're very successful. And it's just so lovely and traditional. And I just really love the fact that we come back, you know, with a haul of things from Boscastle Pottery every time we go, because we know how unique it is.
And how much it means to them as well.
Of course. You
know, the trade. And
yeah, and there's no way to get your hands on that unless you've been to that shop.
Totally unique.
And that's quite, you know, in this day and age, that's quite unusual.
Yeah.
So I really like that.
It's got a lovely emotional connection. It takes you back. Is it Cornwall?
Yes.
It takes you back to Cornwall every time you sip from it. You can hear the sea, you can smell the old caravan. You're there. You're there. Alana, your mug. Tell us about it.
My mug is really cute.
It's so cute.
It has a cute little baby hedgehog on it. And this mug reminds me of a time where, well, just to set the scene, my husband and I bought a 1935 house, which we've been renovating, sadly, for the last 10 years, and it's still not finished. But when we bought the house, the garage had all fallen in, the roof had caved in. So it came to the time where we wanted to pull the whole thing down and have it rebuilt. And my husband found a little hedgehog family of a mum and three babies, nesting in our garage.
Oh, that's so sweet.
And this mug reminds me of all of my favourite qualities of my husband.
Oh.
Because he is really nurturing, and he looked after these hedgehogs like they were his children.
That is just amazing.
He fed them, he checked on them, he wrapped them in a blanket. It was absolutely adorable. And no work could happen until the hedgehogs had, you know, been fed and watered and had enough energy to move on.
That
and
is
one
amazing.
Day they did just disappear.
Oh my
and
gosh.
They'd obviously made their own way in life.
And that's what you want for your children.
I know. And I just love this mug because it just makes me feel all warm. And it was bought for him as a Christmas present, sort of as a little bit of a joke. But I still, you know, like to drink out of it. And a hot chocolate out of this really makes me feel warm and cosy.
Oh, and it reminds you of the lovely qualities about Paul. Anything that reminds you of the not-so-lovely qualities about Paul?
Many things.
Is that for the next episode? That's for the next episode.
But those
qualities, the husband's.
Those qualities are what comes through in his fathering skills as well. So
that's so lovely. I love hedgehogs.
Hedgehogs are
the best. They're so gorgeous
vulnerable
and sweet.
And
yeah, they
cute.
Are very vulnerable.
Even though they're spiky, they're still so really vulnerable.
They are very sweet. And, and actually, a lot of people do a lot of good work, don't they? You know, sort of looking after hedgehogs and saving hedgehogs because they have like sanctuaries where they take them in and look after them. And we were really lucky because we saw a hedgehog in our garden, you know, not so long ago. And you don't see
never seen a hedgehog in our garden before. So we were really surprised to find it. And I mean, thank goodness he did find the family before. Imagine if we pulled the whole thing down.
That's
we'd
amazing.
Have felt absolutely terrible.
Aww.
That's lovely.
So that is the insight into our chosen mug. So I hope you found that absolutely riveting. I mean, I'm riveted. But it is lovely, actually. And it people have mugs that mean things to them in their cupboard, and that's why I thought it'd be a great idea to bring them in today.
You can learn a lot about somebody's favourite
mug. Where you holiday, where I'm from, my situation with being proud to finally be a mum, and the situation with your house and how lovely your husband is, the hedgehogs. Wow. I mean, we might as well just end it all there now.
Hedgehogs, thank you.
Just end the podcast. I think what we should do is tell our lovely listeners about what we felt about each other when we first met each other. First impressions. Dun, sort
dun, dun. Oh, yeah, and maybe as well how we actually came to be a D-Day darling.
You know, how we met and how it came. So, Emily, well, you go for it.
Okay,
you go
with... Well, I've been a darling now for about 9 years, I think.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, you're coming up to a 10-year milestone. I might have to get her a gift.
And so I met another lovely darling at an audition for something else, and we got talking, and she told me all about the D-Day darlings, and I thought, oh, wow, that sounds amazing. Mm-hmm. And then an opportunity came up where she wasn't available to do a few of the events that were in the diary. And so she got in touch with me and to see if I would be happy to cover her on those events. And I was sort of jumped at the chance and said, yes, yes, yes. And then I came, I think I did Wensbury Town Hall. It was a lovely afternoon tea affair. Or it might have been a fish and chips supper, actually. Fish and chips, right. Wensbury Town Hall, fish and chips. It was in November time and it was with yourself and Nicola, Katie. So with Katie and Nicola. And it was just wonderful. I loved it so much. And at that point, I was just sort of covering a gig for someone else. And I thought, oh,
I hope I can ditch her and get the gig, which she did.
I mean, that makes me sound terrible. I didn't elbow her out. But yes, eventually I sort of became a full-time darling.
There's room for loads of darlings in this show.
That's right.
Room for loads.
So I did a few gigs for Katie and she said, yes, come on, join the team, be part of the D-Day Darlings full-time. So it was just really wonderful. And really, that's how I became a D-Day darling. I remember coming to your house to do a rehearsal.
Was it not an audition?
Well, it was
sort of an audition straight rehearsal because I'd never met you to do the gig, that was it.
I think we'd never met. So I think, as far as I knew, it was a rehearsal, but actually...
Katie was checking you out.
It was an audition that I didn't know about.
In the kitchen. Eyeing her up and down.
Yeah, it was probably a good job I didn't know because I would have been more nervous.
Secret
really.
Camera setup.
But yes, I came along to Katie's house to really just run through everything to make sure that I knew what I was doing before the first gig.
I will never forget when I first met Emily. She obviously appeared on my doorstep and she couldn't actually, I remember getting a phone call because she couldn't find it. And she was like, I can't find where you are. I'm trying. Her husband was driving her. Actually, she wasn't married then. She wasn't married. Her lovely Chris.
Oh, he's my boyfriend.
Her boyfriend at the time. She was courting. And she was like ringing me several times. She couldn't find it. And then she turned up and I opened the door and I just saw this beautiful, stunning, red-haired, slim, glamorous, gorgeous, hair blowing in the breeze. And I was just looking at her going, wow, you're absolutely stunningly beautiful. But she wasn't even looking at me. She was literally just looking at her husband who was stood there as well, who's equally as beautiful. And I was just like looking at them both going, oh my God, literally, I've just met you. You two are just so in love, like straight away, just staring at each other. Walked in the house and I just remember looking at them thinking, it was just so nice to see. It was like, you're not that long since met, I think.
No, I think
a
probably...
A few months or a year or...
We were probably still in the first flush of love.
Defo. I was like, do you want me to leave the bloody room?
That's very funny. How times have changed, eh?
She used to say my moon and stars when she first met him. Well, now it's doom and gloom.
No, but we do laugh about this because at this point, you know, Katie and Stuart had been together already for about 13 years by the time we met.
A whole lifetime.
Yeah, you've been together such a long time. Actually, Alana, you're similar with Paul, aren't you? You've been together like a lifetime.
Yeah.
So obviously, we were at the early stages of a relationship. So I suppose we looked all sort of loved up and excited. But obviously, 13 years on, things are...
Battle axe.
things are different. Yeah. But, you know,
well,
that is funny.
It was sort of halfway through because, I've been with Stuart a long time. But, yeah, it was like we were still excited because we just moved to our lovely cottage and, you know, we had Kate. And so we were at an exciting time of our life, but still a very different time. We know we'd been together. We weren't in the first flushes of romance, put it that way. Very, very much not. But it was just amazing.
And, of course, at that point as well, I didn't drive. So that's why Chris came, because he had to drive me to your
everywhere.
House.
You've been cruising and doing things in London. And
yeah, so I'd been sort of living down in London. I'd been working touring at sea and touring. So I hadn't actually managed to do enough lessons to actually take a driving test.
Now that's a whole new podcast, Emily's first driving experiences.
Yeah, I remember you learning to drive.
I learned to drive. I didn't pass my test until I was 31. And it's quite a different... Yeah. It's quite a different experience, I think, doing... I suppose that is a little bit later in life, because a lot of people just pass at 17 or whatever. Yeah. You just don't really have the same concept of like consequences or fear or, you know, worry about, you know, or got all the awful things that could go wrong. So it took me quite a long time to actually learn to drive and take a test, because I was very nervous. But now, I'm obviously much happier now. I've been driving for years and we drive all over the place.
She's got a lot of experience now after working for me.
Yes,
a lot of experience on the road.
Mm-hmm. But I still try and wriggle out of the driving if we're going into central London.
Yeah.
Not a big fan of that. But so Chris, I've got the most amazing support network, and Chris used to drive me everywhere for gigs, and my mum would drop me off at the meeting points.
Yeah.
I think actually initially you probably and understandably felt a little bit worried that I didn't have my own transport. Mm-hmm. You thought, will she be able to?
It's quite tricky. A stipulation, because I need people to be able to get to gigs. And without, because sometimes it's like 2, 3 a.m. arrival back home. Like,
yes.
Public transport is not happening at that time.
No.
So
and
I do need that. But
I had to reassure you, I will get there, I promise you.
I can tell that you're the kind of person that once you gave me your word, I knew that would happen. And also, you were just so amazing at what you did. Beautiful, but such a good singer, performer, all rounder. I thought, I need to keep hold of this one, license or no license.
Oh, that's so sweet. Kate, I mean, I've never heard you say that. We should do podcasts like this more often.
I'm always praising you.
Oh, no, you know what I mean. It's just
the goddess.
Oh, stop.
All right, we're going to be sick now.
Just as if.
But, so that my first impression of you was beautiful, amazing. And similarly, when I met Alana... if it's okay if I jump to that, I was singing at a wedding show, a wedding fair sort of thing. I was on a stand, had my own stand there, and trying to get some wedding bookings. And I remember I remember Alana coming up to me and just saying, "Hey, I'm looking for a wedding singer." And she went, "You're it. Thank you. Can I book you, please? I've got this date." She said, "I don't faff about. She's exactly what you said to me. Once I see what I want, then I'll just go for it. So I'd like to book you there and then." I was like, "Fabulous. I got a booking." And then we got chatting. I realised she knew Emily and she'd worked and trained with Emily as well. And I was just like, wow, she could be a good darling as well. And she told me cruising and stuff that you'd done. And I remember thinking about you, my first impression was you don't mess about. You know what you want. You're very much on it. Gorgeous, beautiful. I just thought, I could just see, as soon as I met you, and you're very much like me in that way, you're determined, driven, know what you want. I just thought, she'd be great to get on board as well. And after having a conversation with Emily, you very quickly became a darling.
Yeah.
Even before I'd even sang at your wedding, because your wedding was like a year later.
Yeah,
much
later.
I snapped you up, love.
Yeah. And I remember that encounter and that conversation so clearly. And I remember walking around that wedding fair with my mum, and I just heard this voice. And I was like, wait.
We'll be blue. It wasn't that.
No, it was a love song. It must have been a love song. But I just remember thinking, oh gosh, she's got a beautiful voice.
It's hello.
And then there you were, this gorgeous blonde lady. And I was like, that's it. She's who I need at my wedding. And I remember that conversation. And then once we'd got onto the chatting about being a singer and
connections we shared.
Yeah, and I remember you looking at me going, you do look quite vintage, actually. And I could see
straight
the cogs
away, my
turning.
Business.
And we exchanged details. And I don't know if you'll remember this, but I actually remember getting home and getting an email from you with a booking of 2 cruise gigs. And one was to Australia and one was to Spain.
They never came off.
No, they didn't come off. But I remember getting these 2 bookings for gigs, for cruise gigs. And, you know, a flight to Brisbane, and I thought, oh my gosh, I've really made it.
Yeah.
Like, I've actually made it. Yeah. And I was so excited that I was like,
sorry
part
that
of it
happened.
Now. No, but that was the start, wasn't it? And then obviously the gigs came in from there. But
I think when in this industry, like, it's so hard to meet people that tick the boxes that you need. Committed, dedicated. I know this sounds a bit weird and a bit mean, but logistically can work as well, because you have to take that into consideration. Meeting points, where they live, is it accessible? Is it going to work? Mm. Like, there's so much to consider when you're booking, darlings. And the fact that both of you actually are so local to me, good at what you do, get it, are on the same page. I can't have girls with me that don't get that because it just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. You've got to be on the same page and want the same things and be moving in the same direction. Otherwise, you'll just be pulling from pillar to post.
It is a juggle, but you have to make the juggle work.
And that
comes from a place of passion.
Yeah, definitely.
That comes from like our passion as well of doing this and wanting to be a part of the entire message.
I definitely can imagine, because obviously I've known Alana a long time, because we went to...
Yeah, we knew each other already.
Coventry Youth Operetta Group, we were in together, and we did the Fame Academy bursary together as well. So yeah, we just sort of kept
popping up, didn't we? Like, oh, hi!
And, you know, I always knew that Alana was like an amazing singer. I still remember when Coventry Youth Operetta Group did... They did the school's edition of Les Miserables and you played Fontaine.
Yeah.
And I came to see that. I mean, I knew Alana anyway. I'd seen you perform before, but gosh, I was totally blown away. I was like, wow, she's amazing. Yeah. So, of course, when Katie said that she'd met you at that wedding fair and that she was going to be performing for your wedding, it was almost, I thought, how is she not a D-Day darling already?
Yeah.
Local girl, incredible singer. You know, this makes absolutely perfect sense. But I mean, I think in terms of, like you said, sort of making things work and having that passion and that drive and just, you know, just being willing to just go to the ends of the earth to make things work.
Yeah.
Alana's your girl for that.
Oh, well, and you are as well, though. You both are. But definitely you are. You understand, because you've got a business head on you as well, you understand about grabbing opportunities and that is so important. And that's where the Darlings is where it is now, because we grab opportunities and I have girls with me that will grab the opportunities. If we don't grab the opportunities, then we don't get to where we want to get to, and therefore the message will not be as widely spread. And that's the whole point. It's all about putting it out there in the biggest way that we possibly can. And, you know, and then hopefully we'll get some work from that as well.
That's right. And I suppose the reality of the situation that I suppose you don't necessarily always talk about is that it can be quite inconvenient sometimes in terms of, like, you know, timings with family life, with other, trying to, you know, juggle other, I don't know, jobs, responsibilities, other things, areas of your life. It, you know, it's not always something.
It's not routine.
That's it. And so
every day is different, every job is different,
which makes it amazing. It's hard to juggle.
Yes,
that's the excitement.
Yes,
and the busyness makes me feel alive.
Yeah,
like that's like it gives me.
I can see that in you. Yeah, I can see that. And also, I would actually say, for me, I see a lot of similarities in Alana and Katie.
Yeah.
You know, you're both very, very driven. You're both, you seem to have like boundless energy. You just got energy and drive that will, I mean,
high capacity.
You've got a high capacity. You've got a good bandwidth.
Yeah.
You can juggle a lot of things at the same time.
Definitely got a lot of wit since the baby. Definitely got a lot of wit. Extra wit.
But you're very driven. You're both very nurturing. And obviously, you know, You train youngsters and you give me a similar energy, which is make it happen.
I remember meeting you and you coming round to my house and seeing me working and obviously you inspire. Mm.
But that still happens, because I said to you at the time, it really inspires me when I've worked with you for the day and then I go home and I want to, you know, start new things on my business. Yeah. And I still have that now.
It's like when you go visit someone's house. It's like when you visit someone's house and you see your house all beautiful and then you're like, oh, I don't want to go home and have a good tidy up because their house is really nice. But I know what you mean.
Yeah.
It's that type of thing. It's like you get inspired by each other, don't you?
And definitely.
I think that's what's lovely about the D-Day Darlings, is we all bounce off each other. We all support each other. And obviously, in the next episode, we're going to be talking about some deeper subjects regarding us as women and some struggles that we've been through, and opening up a little bit about that and how we help each other. And I think it needs that support network, and it needs that similar personalities, all different, but we've all got similar qualities that can support each other through those times. And we're really looking forward to opening up actually and talking about that. But we, you know, us as people, us as women, I'm really, really proud to have both of these girls sitting with me. And I'm really excited to actually bring the other girls in as well and let you hear and their stories and how they began and their first impressions of each other. And, you know, it's so lovely. And I hope this is useful information, listeners, by the way. I hope you're enjoying this.
I think it goes without saying that my first impression of Katie was, wow, is there anything more that this woman can take
sorry,
on?
Sorry, can we just... Wow. Sorry, it was wow.
Thank you.
Don't leave it there.
Wow.
Nothing more to be said, just wow.
I mean, obviously, totally beautiful, incredible voice, very driven, wonderful sort of business drive as well, I would say, with Katie. I just feel that, honestly, there is nobody else in my life that takes on as much as Katie. And... just manages to make it work. I just think it's...
And does nothing small scale.
Nothing small scale.
Just, yeah.
Straight to the jugular on everything. And it's... And
go big or go home.
That's it. Actually, there's a bit of a comedy line here because Katie likes to say, girls, we're going global.
Yeah.
And
think big.
I sort of, you know, in a very, obviously in a very affectionate way, I do sometimes liken it, you know, to the old Del Boy. Like, this time next week, we'll be millionaires.
That's pushing it a bit. But. Well, I get it from my dad, you see, because my dad's a market trader and he used to take anything on. I mean, he's a little bit like you, entrepreneurial, fingers in pies. He's gone from being a market, well, he's a market trader, but he started off on the markets when he was like 15, 16 years old. He's still there now at 78. It was not really on the market, but he's in the Wakefield sort of shopping area.
Amazing.
He's got a shop. Yeah, but he's done everything. He's had a very successful seafood delicatessen, Ashby Seafood. He's had a massive three-story toy store, which was like a dream to us when we were kids. Bedding businesses, and then still like out on the markets, like Del Boy with a microphone on, telling gags, jokes, gags. Very successful in his time. And I think he's passed that on to me, like that. From the roots upwards, basically, just start off small and then just build, keep going until you've got an empire. And I won't stop till I have that empire. I'm not just building one business, I'm building an empire. And that is also with a massive heart in there about building an empire that is remembering, that is nurturing, that is caring, that's loving. Do you know what I mean? And that's really
Yeah, it's heart-driven.
It's heart-driven. Of course, it's a business and I have to earn a living, otherwise I can't do it full-time. It's more than full-time. It's like 6 full-time jobs. But it's like... I love what I do and I think I get that passion from my dad.
Yeah, I can see that, definitely.
The roots, the market trader.
I can see the market trader. I mean,
see me with my box at gigs with
yeah,
the CDs.
Yeah, the box of CDs. All right, come on, roll up. Only, you know, I've only got 2,000 CDs left.
All the gags.
All the old gags, it's £10 each, 2 for £20. All of the old gags.
But when we had the album out with Sony, first of all, because I'd sold CDs out of these little cardboard boxes for years, pre-BGT, pre-album, like, I just saw, and oh my God, did I still love it. Absolutely love setting up my stall, getting my little cash box and having the queues of people wanting to buy a CD that we'd recorded just at home. And then obviously we got BGT, we got signed to Sony. And then initially I couldn't sell my albums at shows.
I remember.
So the cardboard box and the cash tin days were over. Gutted. So I'd gone from, like, you know, we had a top 5 album, you know, amazing success, Sony signed, but I was gutted because I couldn't set up my market stall.
You missed your market trade a bit.
Because that's when you meet people, that's when you talk, that it opens up conversation as well. And yes, we still had that, but if people didn't really want to come and buy a CD, we wouldn't speak to as many people. As soon as we got the CD back, we were there, talking to everybody, you know, selling some CDs. Loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
But we got asked all the time, have you got a CD?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's part of it, isn't it? It's like people
wanted
the
music. Well, we have,
but
you've got to go online and buy it now. It's like, that's rubbish. Who wants to go online? Yeah. No, get the cardboard box out.
I think you should tell everybody your dad's famous line about you when you were, like, growing up and performing.
Yeah. Well, obviously, I never stop. Whirlwind, Katie, always have been singing, dancing, going from one thing to the other, everything. And then obviously would tire my mum and dad out with endless singing, endless dancing around the kitchen, around the house. Everyone's exhausted, massive family. And there's just me in the middle of it all, just creating a massive, I mean, you can tell my energy. It's like, imagine me as like a 7-year-old.
Mom, watch
my dad
me.
Used to come and get me and say, look, love, you're a good turn, but you're on too long. And I mean,
that is brilliant.
Yeah, that was it. And I still say that now. Like, he still says it to me now. You're a good son, but you're on too long, love.
You see, the problem is now Katie's given me that information. You know, I can just lean over quietly at the end of a gig when Katie's been talking for a bit too long.
Non-stop.
You're a good turn, love. You're on too long.
So, he's quite right, though. I mean, I don't know about the good bit, but I'm definitely on too long.
It's all part of the charm, Katie. It's all part of the charm.
Shall we talk about where it first began? The origins of the D-Day Darling. How are we doing for time? Are we going on?
Oh,
don't
worry about
it. Who cares? Who cares? Do you want to talk about... Do you want to hear about how the D-Day Dance all began? Can I hear you at home, please? It's unanimous. They're desperate. They're desperate. Hear that. The applause. The roar.
So basically, I think, Katie, really, you need to lead this one because it was your brainchild, really, wasn't it? All those years ago, about 15 years ago.
D-Day Darlings first began, some people might know the story, some people might not, was basically born from, you know, being on a professional performer, singing, dancing in different shows. But it was a specific period of my time, 15 years ago, when I was performing in a variety show, which, oh, me, I'm all variety. I love it. I love the old schoolness. Anything that's post-Tom Jones era is too modern for me. I love, you know, I love all that, you know, Charlie Chaplin years. I love, you know, that's modern to me as well. But, I, you know, anything that's vintage and revival and variety are there. I'm loving it. So I was performing in these gorgeous variety shows and we used to have these coach loads of the older generation coming along to these shows to have a lovely lunch and watch the show. And we used to do all types of music from all genres, 50s, 60s, 20s, everything, musical theatre. And we used to do this 40s section in their wartime section, singing the Vera Lynn stuff, Flanagan and Allen, like music hall, like all 40s stuff, like the wartime music. And oh my God, did I see how much that era of music moved people way above anything else. All of the genres. Yes, they were great. They were dancing and they were partying, but nothing moved them emotionally like that music. And I just really could see that. And I thought, that is what I want to do. It filled me up. It made me happy. I felt like I could really connect to that era. Something happened during that time in that show. And I thought, that's what I want to do with my career. I want to build my career around that. Plus, I could see how much it meant to people. So my heart was like pounding. So it was an absolute no-brainer for me. And I slowly began to write, to research the music, write things down, spoke to this old drummer friend of mine who was on the shows at the time. And he was an older guy. He's passed away now, absolutely gutted, because he was a lovely guy, very successful drummer. And he would help me with the repertoire as well. And that was just amazing. I actually dedicate quite a lot of it to him, actually, John. Lovely, John Gilbert. And the D-Day Darlings was born overnight, formed as a duo originally. Just asked one of the girls, do you want to do this with me? And we'll just go halves on the gig fee and I'll get the gig and then we'll put the show together. And it was like, yeah, let's just do it. You know, just wanted to give it a try. And after the first gig, I thought there's a real market for this. And it didn't take me long to absolutely move heaven and earth to move it to the next level. It really grew really quickly because it's such a popular genre. People want it. It's really, really needed and accessible. And obviously there's veterans and, you know, it's got a lot of depth and context to it. So I just, yeah, I put the show together and then I just rang a couple of agents. And before we knew it, we were full of bookings. I remember just coming into the shows every day and saying, because we were still doing the variety shows at the time, and saying, oh, we've just got another two bookings. Oh, I've got three bookings now, four, five. It was like, I was excited beyond belief. And I remember just saying, I really feel passionately about this. And I think there's a massive, massive journey here for us. And I remember feeling it. I knew where I wanted to get to with it. And there we go. And it very quickly went from two to three. A lovely darling Nicola joined. And all those years ago. And then Louise. And then, yeah, Emily. Yeah. And then it just spiraled into Alana. And, you know, everybody else just joined in. And the more the merrier. Very quickly it was a trio. But I was turning work away. We got that busy. I was turning gigs away. And me being a market trader's daughter, I was like, I don't want to be losing business here. I'm going to get another three girls. And then I'm going to get another three girls. Because why not? You know, it's the same music. It'll be beautiful to do. We can reach more people. So before I knew it, I had 15 D-Day Darlings. And there we go. And it was really successful straight away. I was chuffed.
It's just amazing. But doesn't it show the appetite for this music?
Oh, yeah.
It really does. I mean, We'll talk about this, you know, on another episode. But of course, when we did Britain's Got Talent, I never imagined in a million years that we would go as far as we did. You know, we got to the final. And I think it just shows the huge appetite for this incredible music. It's still so important mm-hmm. and it's still so loved. And I can honestly say, hand on heart, you know, nearly 10 years into being part of the D-Day Darlings, I enjoy singing this music as much now as I did when I started.
Every day.
I never, ever get tired of it. Mm-hmm. I get shivers down my spine when I hear the introduction to I'll Be Seeing You. Mm. Yeah. You know, when the harmonies come in the White Cliffs of Dover, I love it so, so much every single time. I mean, how many times have we performed this music over the years?
Yeah.
So many times. And it's still an honour and a privilege to do this music.
I think it's because it has got so much depth, and every time you perform it, there's different people that in the audience that these songs mean something different. So it's always different every time you perform it. Everyone's got a different remembrance about it, a different feeling, you know, a different
it'll
story.
It'll stir up different memories, different emotions. Yeah.
So we are stirring those emotions for so many different people, different emotions. So it feels different every time you do it, but still as important. And I think you've got to have that passion, and I think that's why it works so well with us.
Definitely. I mean, I remember one of the early gigs I did, it was an afternoon tea, and I saw, you know, on a table quite close to the front, there was an older lady who I think was there with her daughter, and, you know, they were having a really wonderful time, and the lady was singing along with every song, every lyric, and the daughter just... looked, she was so moved, you know, she was crying so much. And I remember speaking to her afterwards, and basically the mother was having, you know, she was having problems with her memory, obviously, yeah. You know, she was experiencing some memory loss. And obviously she was at that stage of her life that the music was so crucial and so... It's that strange. I mean, I don't really know how it works. It's very scientific. But if someone is suffering with Alzheimer's, the music and the lyrics, it's one of the last things that will ever go.
Yeah.
You know, they're there. They are very vivid. So when it comes to singing along to all of this music that was obviously a huge part of this woman's life, mm-hmm. she remembered every single word.
Yeah.
And the daughter said, "I've just seen my mum for the last... you know, for the last 45 minutes whilst you've been singing, I've just seen my mum again. I haven't seen her for a while."
Mm. I thought, music really does.
And I just thought, gosh, that's powerful.
Mm, yeah.
That is so
powerful. It is powerful.
And that is the power of music.
Sometimes when I'm singing the song, sometimes I struggle to get through a song, and you have to kick into, you know, sort of doctor theatre, or that has to kick in, because what you don't want to do, you're entertaining at the end of the day, you're performing, you don't want to lose it, because you want to you want to continue to sing the song that people love. But there's so many times, especially when I'm singing Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square, and I sing that line, "I know because I was there," and I sing and I look at someone and that word resonates with that person because they were there at that time in love, romance, you know, and I instantly connect with them. And sometimes I am fighting back the tears just for me singing that line. I'll get down on one knee and I'll literally stop, time it perfectly and sing it to that person. And their reaction makes me just want to just crumble, because you've got to keep going, because you don't, you know, all the audience have a memory in a moment. So you don't want to, but it's so powerful, isn't it, Alana?
Yeah, I have that with "I'll Be Seeing You" very often.
Gosh.
I love that song so
the lyrics.
Much. Oh, it's stunning.
The storytelling.
It's stunning.
Yeah, and you sound amazing when you sing that. And what I was going to say to you was, right back again to the origins of D-Day Darlings, to talk about the Vera Lynn connection, was very, like I said, it all snowballed. The start of the D-Day Darlings, like I said, it instantly became a very quick overnight sort of success in terms of we got a lot of work quite quickly, which was amazing. But we were endorsed by Dame Vera Lynn very early on, purely on a chance meeting of someone that I bumped into that knew Dame Vera Lynn. And I got chatting with her, and obviously Dame Vera quickly became my absolute icon. Once I'd connected with this music, I was like, wow, what a woman, what a voice. She's amazing. And to meet somebody that knew her, that could reach to her and say, "Would you support the D-Day Darlings on their mission of carrying on this music into the new generation?" She said, "Look, I can ask her for you." And I was like, "Yes, please." So she asked her. And then I was in my dressing room the next day doing the variety shows. And I got a knock at the door. And she said, Kate, I said, "Yeah." She said, "Dame Vera says yes. She'll support your show. She'll endorse what you're doing. You can use her name on all your marketing collateral." I mean, come on. To be supported by the woman who was there through all, entertaining the troops as the Force of Sweethearts. And we were pitching ourselves in that way, we couldn't have, it was just a proud moment to get that. And then to then go on to meet Dame Vera years down the line, full circle. Yeah. And that she invited us to her house. It wasn't, we weren't knocking on the door stalking her, we got the invite. Wow.
Mm.
What a moment, you know, to go for a full circle.
Definitely.
From the beginning, not to the end, it was near the end of her life. So I guess it sort of was, but it felt like what's the word, like the universe had moved from us starting off as a small time trio to becoming sort of music artists with the Sony recording and everything, and for to go from there to there was just a really proud moment.
I think having the opportunity to meet Vera Lynn, you know, through obviously what I've been part of with the D-Day Darlings, has got to be the highlight for me over everything, really.
Yeah.
You know, Vera Lynn was somebody who you know, was so important to my grandparents. You know, I've got, again, I'll go into more detail about this on another podcast, but I've got a very, very detailed diary that my granny kept all through the war years, because she met my husband and they got married. She met her husband, my grandpa. Oh gosh, I'm overcome. So my granny and grandpa basically got married in the wartime, in 1944, and they met and got married during that time. So there, you know, there's this wonderful material in my granny's journal, and it just gives me such an insight into that time, because it's a really beautiful piece of writing, and it sort of charts their meeting, their love story, and set against the backdrop of World War II. Mm-hmm. Wow. And in there, she lists at the end of the diary her most important, proudest moments, and in there it says, met Vera Lynn.
I know, it's amazing.
And wow. I can say that I've met her too.
You've met Vera Lynn. It's full circle.
I know.
Generations.
I know.
But you're the last generation that will meet her. Like, I know. You know. Your children won't meet her. And that's, you know, it's a sad fact. Mm. You know. That But what an amazing moment. I think Dame Vera is such a shining light in everything that we do. And our listeners will definitely know that. She is huge. And we feel her around us so much. I mean, you know, we've continuing with her charity, the Dame Vera Lynn Children's Charity. I'm ambassador for the charity, we all are, but also I'm ambassador for the statue memorial that they're raising money to build a statue of Dame Vera and that they're going to be erecting in Dover. I am privileged, like you would not believe, to be the person that, you know, is singing on that and that's provided the vocal for that. I mean, what a moment to get call.
Yeah, you were so thrilled about that. And it was just really such an honour to be asked, wasn't it?
Yeah, I performed in Dover a year on the 18th of June. It was a year since she passed, and I performed the White Cliffs of Dover in Dover at the launch of this memorial. Sir David Amos, who obviously tragically was killed, was the chairman of that memorial campaign. Gosh, what a moment. I cannot even describe. To have Dame Vera's family there, to have Decca there, Decca Music, to have Dame Vera's manager and close friend Susan Fleet, who I've become really close with, all of Dame Vera's friends and family and influential people there, like, to be there, sing, I can't even tell you how I felt. I felt like I was having an out-of-body experience. It was strange. I mean, people might be thinking, oh, it's not that big a deal. To me, it was unbelievable. You know, it was incredible.
Mm. We've had, incredible, you know, moment. Yeah. And like, it's not completed yet, but looking at the statue as it, you know, gets in its process, it
Paul
looks
Day.
Absolutely
lovely. Paul Day.
It looks wonderful. The sculpture, I should say. It's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. And so needed for generations to come, to go and to know what she did. I mean, we don't want her to fade away and pass. We need a figure there. We need a physical figure there that everyone can go in Dover, in the place that she's so associated with.
Yes.
To go and support her and celebrate her, and learn. And,
it will be lovely. You know. And I think as well, it's probably worth mentioning that her charity, the Dame Vera Lynn Children's Charity, they do some incredible work.
Oh, it's phenomenal, isn't it?
We've been to the centre.
Yeah, we performed there, didn't we?
Did. Over Christmas.
Yeah, Christmas concert there and for all the trustees. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, they support children under five and their families with
motor learning.
Yeah, motor learning and cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. And it's just, the work they do is incredible. They really provide a lifeline. And mm-hmm. so we're really proud to be ambassadors of the charity as well.
Yeah. So proud. Alana, what's your most memorable moment of being a D-Day darling?
Oh, gosh.
So far. I mean, there's a
I'm
lot.
Going to say, if I had to pick one, because mm-hmm. there are many, I would say it was the Boudicca cruise as a whole, our trip to Normandy with the veterans for D-Day 75. I think that was monumental in so many ways. Yeah. We learnt so much. Mm-hmm. We experienced so much about that day from the stories of the veterans. I was told stories that veterans hadn't really told people before. Yeah. It was just amazing. Mm-hmm. And then to sing on the cliff of overlooking Gold Beach, and to have, you know, the helicopters flying over above, it was just incredible.
It was breathtaking.
It really was. The entire trip was just phenomenal.
I was obviously there on Arromanch.
It was amazing.
To have the veteran, to be singing on the cliffs, to have the veteran seated in front of you, because they were there, and then to be looking just over their heads in the horizon at the sea, it really put it into context. That day, that time, that anniversary,
75 years
on, those veterans sitting there, we were singing I'll Remember You, which is the song that I wrote, co-wrote, about loss, the huge sacrifice that was made. There was nothing more huge than D-Day. You know, that significant
moment. And up until
that
point, we'd learnt so much. We'd spoken to so many veterans and their families. We'd watched the documentary in the theatre of the ship.
Yeah.
We'd visually and sort of through their words experienced a little insight as to what that day was like, if you can even possibly begin to imagine it. And then to be stood singing on the clifftop, and just having that in front, it really made your imagination go. It really made you see that experience, that day.
It's almost like
it was so emotional.
To the experience of trying to imagine it.
You can't
really get much closer. You know, you've got your first-hand accounts from, I mean, there were about 300 veterans, weren't there, on board the Boudicca. And, you know, you've been able to have that first-hand experience from them.
Well, we had a laugh with them as well.
Sitting
on the trunk with a few of them, sitting on the knees, pulling, oh, come here, darling. Pulling you on your knees. And
there were a couple
you can come back to my cabin later if you want.
Do you remember the red lipstick?
Yeah.
They'd have kisses on their cheeks from the darlings with the red lipstick. And then the next day, they'd find us and tell us that they hadn't had a wash the night before because they wanted the lipstick to stay.
Oh, yeah. Covered in red lipstick. They loved us. We felt like modern day force of sweethearts.
Yeah.
We were just walking around the ship, entertaining them, not even like in a professional capacity. Like, we did a big show on there and it was amazing.
But in a relaxed way.
Yeah. They'd pull us on his knee, we'd have a sing song, then we'd move on to the next group of veterans, and we got to know them all by name. We got to know some really, really sad stories, you know, sad stories about some of them seeing their friends being buried alive, and stories that you cannot imagine. It was so moving and so sad, but so needed for us to hear, to get to fully understand what they went through.
That's it. And what a privilege, really, to be able to be on that journey with them.
Such a
privilege. Share that.
Yeah.
Really, because on that, you know, on Goldcliff, with all of those veterans in that moment, 75 years on, you're having the honour and the privilege of sharing that, you know, moment of reflection, that moment, you know, commemorating, you know, all of those people that were lost. And actually, in some sort of wistful sense now, I look back at D-Day 75, and obviously next year will be D-Day 80, but we are obviously, we're moving to a time where very few surviving veterans will be able to share that moment. So what a privilege to be able to have that for D-Day 75.
Yeah.
And I probably think, as far as the D-Day Darlings are concerned, there's nothing greater than that trip.
Oh, it was...
in terms of the heart of getting to the heart of what the D-Day Darlings are all about.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I had to miss it because I just had a baby.
Yeah.
So I wasn't actually there, which is why I'm talking about it in this way, because I feel very close to the experience of it, because I've shared so much with the rest of the girls who were able to be on that trip, and I know how much it meant. I can see how much it meant, and I mean some of the girls even said when they came back it sort of changed everything for them.
It did.
Changed even.
I felt different. We all felt different.
Changed the way they, you know, looked at life almost. I know that sounds very dramatic.
Gratitude like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah. And I think
that's why it's important the children know about this. That's why it's important. And we did miss you, Emily.
I know.
We did.
It wasn't the same. I mean, I missed my little drinking partner, but she's not really a drinking partner.
I was going to say.
One glass of wine, she's anybody's. I mean, them veterans, they wouldn't have been safe.
That is true.
They would not have been safe.
Yeah, I am a bit of a lightweight, has to be said.
One thing that really stands out for me was quite recently, was a year ago actually, when we got to go and sing at Dame Vera Lynn's memorial, the memorial of her life. For me, going down to London the night before, and I was heavily pregnant, a week to go before I had Grayson, So anyway, Stuart took me to Westminster, and I can't even tell you how weird it was. Just turned up at this incredible place, which we've been visited as sightseers. You know,
yeah, we see it on the TV,
you know,
don't we?
You see it, and it's full of royal events. Yeah, tourists and everyone, you know. I turned up, so quiet, hardly anybody around. It wasn't during COVID. Everything was back to normal. And we turned up, and I was at the gates, and we were trying to get in, and we spoke to the security guard, and then they went, oh, yeah, you need to go through there. Took us behind the back, the Dean of Westminster, gorgeous man, lovely, took us through the side door at Westminster Abbey and took us through to this incredible place, which I've never been in before. I've seen it on the TV. I've seen the Queen's coronation. You know, it's such a historic place that we so visual as part of our life. And to walk in there on my own with a sound guy there and a speaker and to say, right, we'll just do a quick sound check then. And to sing the White Cliffs of Dover on my own in Westminster Abbey as a sound check at like 9 o'clock at night. Incredible. Can't even tell you that moment. Mm. I had so much going through my head of who'd, you know, the people that got married there, the kings, the queens, the funerals, the, you know, we see it all the time. And, yeah. You know, Diana and just incredible. And then I did one sound check and the sound guy said, oh, are you happy with that? I was like, no, I think I need to do it again.
Oh, yeah.
So I did it again.
Katie Milk in it.
I did it again because I just didn't want the moment to end. The acoustics, oh my gosh, I was singing Dame Vera's song in there. Like it was about, I could feel Dame Vera around. And then he was like, okay, are you happy? I was like, no, I think I need one more. Oh. I think about 10 takes in. I think I'd finally, he was like, right, come on now. You're a good turn.
But you're on too long.
So I wrapped up reluctantly and walked home with Stuart just arm in arm, just like, we were just quiet. It was just like, what the hell just happened?
What a special moment.
But very we received special. That video from you of the sound check, and I remember watching that and just thinking, whoa.
It was unbelievable. And the fact I had Grayson in there as well, like I can show him that video and go, you came out, my darling, a week later, you were there. Oh, again, it's just passing it down to the younger generation. Yeah. And I am so proud of the D-Day Darlings, as you can feel, as you can hear. My girls here, Alana and Emily, are so proud of the D-Day Darlings. Like, there's no question. We love our job.
Yeah.
We're in it for the long haul, and it's been a long haul already. But believe me, girls, we are going global. We're going global. And I think that's a good place to wrap up this episode. And I hope you've enjoyed it. So I hope we've given you a bit of an insight. I mean, not too much of an insight. I mean, I could definitely give you more.
Yes, more to come.
Yeah, definitely. Do you want to talk about what's coming up next?
Yes,
Emily, on the
so
next episode?
We're going to be giving you a little bit more of an insight into our personal lives. Or
even more of an insight? How much more personal can we get? I know what knickers you wear.
So, like we've mentioned that we've spent a lot of time together and we've come through some pretty big life events, you know, life-changing events, you know, personal life events.
So we're going to share some of those moments with you, and we look forward to chatting with you then.